Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the first episode of Football Unscripted here on the brand new Pit Talk Network. I am your host, Corey Cohen, and I'm thrilled to have on this first ever episode of Football Unscripted, my former co-host from back in the day on Cardiac Hill, Jim Hammett, now with Panther Lair. Jim, thank you so much for coming on. I'm thrilled to have you as the first ever guest here on Football Unscripted.
Yeah, it's quite an honor. Thanks, Corey. And, you know, as always, it's kind of the off season with Pitt Sports, but there's just always something to talk about.
Yeah, so it's where I said in the last when I launched the network and the brief introductory episode that, yeah, things aren't going to be as regular now as they will be in the fall and winter, where it's going to be every single week necessarily. But as you just said, there's always something happening. So on this episode of Football Unscripted, we are going to talk about the spring game. Something that just happened this past weekend. Jim, I know you were there. I was not able to be there, but the spring game comes around and every year we read into it. Sometimes things matter more. Sometimes they don't matter as much as we think. What do you think about how important the spring game is in general?
In general, I don't think it's always all that big of a deal, because I go back to last year's spring game, and if you recall, Daniel Carter was kind of the star of the show. I think he had 10 carries in the game, and he went into the season and had 16 in 13 games. So, you know, sometimes what you see in April, you know, it doesn't really translate to what you see in August and September. So you always have to take the spring game with a little bit of a grain of salt, but at the same time, it's always an opportunity for some young players to emerge, and I think we saw a little bit of that on Saturday. So it's always a showcase. You want to see, okay, who's the new quarterback? You want to see the new recruits. You want to see now in this day and age, you want to see the new transfers. So that's kind of what you're looking to see. But as for the game itself, I mean, I think the big story this year was they changed the format a little bit to try to make it a little more exciting. I don't know if they actually accomplished that, maybe a little bit. But yeah, that's kind of spring football in a nutshell.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that format change. So normally they have a draft and they split everyone up into two teams, a blue and a gold. And so you'll essentially have both the offense and the defense split in half. So it doesn't tell you a ton, because you end up having a situation where your offensive line is split up, or, you know, the running backs aren't, you know, it can be divided. In this scenario, this year for the first time, they decided to do away with that and just have essentially offense versus defense. One was blue, one was gold. What did you think of that format change? I know you said that it was intended to be for entertainment, but do you think it also succeeded in terms of having the teams be a little bit more cohesive?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it helped the offense more, because I think whenever you did the draft, I think what always happened was you always hear about how the offensive line likes to work as a unit. There needs to be cohesion. So whenever you have the starting left tackle, the third string left guard, and the backup center on the same starting line in the spring game, it predictably becomes a mess. And that's what happened in the past couple of years. And especially with Pitt, where they're so deep on the defensive line that, you know, the second, third team defensive line, they can really cause havoc on just about, you know, the starting offensive line. So whenever you had that jumbled offensive line, that really just made things messy. And it was just hard to watch. So I think keeping the offensive line on Saturday definitely helped with cohesion. It made the offense look a little bit better. And I think things went a little bit smoother for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason, right, in practices that you don't split up the offense and split up the defense. I mean, you have your offense, you have your defense. As you said, especially at the line of scrimmage, the offensive line, you need to know the people next to you. And so it always did seem a little bit weird that got jumbled up. This seemed to be a solid change in format, especially at some of those positions where they're not just plug and play.
Yeah, definitely. And there was still a little mix up because you had the first team offense against the second team defense and, you know, the other way around on that side of the ball. So it definitely wasn't like the most exciting. I'm sure everyone would have liked maybe a series of two of the first team against the first team. But Pat Narduzzi said he saw enough of that in the spring. And I think another big thing in spring football is just getting out of it healthy. You know, he talked about some prior spring practices where Brian O'Neill got hurt or Deslin Alexander got hurt. And those are big injuries. And the vibe on Saturday in the postgame press conferences, they didn't have that big injury. I mean, there's a few guys sitting out, but I don't think it's anything significant that'll, you know, harm them come August. Like Gavin Bartholomew and Kanante Mugfield didn't play, but I don't think they're overly concerned with their injuries. So as long as you come out of spring football healthy and you know who your quarterback is, I think those are kind of the two goals you want to have.
Well, that's actually a great segue. So let's talk about quarterbacks, because that's a position that obviously it's the most important position in sports. And I might say, and people could correct me, I might say that this could be the deepest that the Pitt quarterback room has been in quite a while. So let's break down, let's say the four quarterbacks. I believe there were five that got action in that game, but we're going to talk about four, starting with Phil Jurkovec, who by all accounts is slated to be the starting quarterback for Pitt football come this fall. What did you see out of him? I mean, he didn't have too much to do. They didn't work him super hard, but what did you see out of him there in the spring overall? What's your vibe on him as the starting quarterback, the transfer from BC?
I think they're pretty excited about Phil, and like you said, it wasn't like a big workload for him in the spring game. He only attempted seven passes. The one drive that did stick with me is he did go 3 for 3 on one drive for 40 yards, and he had two nice completions to Bub Means. And I think one of the biggest things with this offense this year is you're trying to find new playmakers. So you want to see your quarterback and perhaps your top receiver, have a little bit of connection. And I think we saw
chemistry.
Chemistry. That's what we're going for. So I think, you know, you saw that. So I think that was a good sign out of Phil. And just the general vibe around, you know, talking to Cignetti, DiBiasio, like just all the coaches around the program. It's like, I think they feel confident in that he knows how to run the offense. So, you know, obviously everyone knows the backstory of he played under Cignetti a couple years ago at Boston College, and his best college season was under Cignetti. So the thought is the two come together and, you know, they get things fixed next year. So I think everything that happened so far this spring is it's on track to happen. And, you know, it's just a matter of can we see if it happens?
Yeah. And now it's obviously every year they're going to talk about their starting quarterback, their QB1 as, yeah, we're really excited about him. We saw it last year with Keaton Slovis. They were really excited about him. They were looking forward to it. And then he didn't pan out that well. And there are a bunch of factors into that. Now, Jurkovec has a few things going for him. He's obviously more comfortable. He's from Pittsburgh. He's more comfortable with the school, with the area. As you said, Cignetti was his offensive coordinator at BC, where he had a phenomenal year. As you said, his best year. So what's your sort of BS detector like in terms of sometimes they say, yeah, we're really not that they're lying. I'm sure they're always confident. But is your read that, yeah, this isn't just they're saying they're confident or they think they're confident, but they're not sure? do you think that this year with this guy, with a new quarterback coming in, that they that this is different than, say, Keaton Slovis or Max Brown when it comes to a transfer QB coming in?
Yeah, I think it's all about just being comfortable with the offense. And it's not like I thought Keaton Slovis was a bad quarterback. It just sometimes it takes a couple years when you get a new offense coordinator. Even Kenny Pickett's first year under Mark Whipple wasn't really anything pretty. So I think even it doesn't matter how good of a quarterback you are, is if you're not comfortable with your coach and, you know, you're just trying to learn an offense on the fly, it's gonna look a little shaky at times. And I think with Djurkovic, I think there is that comfort level there. So I think they do feel more confident just on, you know, all the players around him know the offense and he knows the offense. So it's not like last year, everyone was brand new to the offense, and it's not that this year. So I do think there's a belief that it will get a little bit better.
Yeah, having that continuity is definitely likely going to be helpful. And even though Djurkovic isn't continuity necessarily, there's a lot more than a guy coming in from USC like we've seen in the past. Okay, second string quarterback, likely Christian Veyer, who's got a name that's pronounced not exactly how it's spelled. He had the only touchdown pass of the day. He's a transfer from Penn State, got quite a few years of eligibility still. So he's not going to be the starting quarterback, but what did you see out of him in that spring game, and what do you think he's going to be able to provide both as a backup this year and really potentially quarterback of the future in the next couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're really high on Christian Veyer. And, you know, the thing with him and his touchdown drive is he was going against the first team defense. So, I mean, they didn't ask him to throw any deep passes, a lot of quick passes and screen passes. I think the touchdown itself was a screen to Derek Davis, who made a nice run after the catch. So they didn't load him up on anything crazy, but I thought he looked sharp. I thought he looked efficient. And that was kind of the book out of him at Penn State. And really, I think even Penn State was, you know, okay with moving forward with him as a starting quarterback eventually, until they got Drew Allar, who's, you know, really going to be a great quarterback prospect for them. So I think that's why Christian kind of looked for a different spot. And, you know, Pitt recruited him a little bit out of high school. Obviously, it wasn't Cignetti, but like he had some familiarity with Narduzzi. And I just think it's a good fit for him. So, you know, in a world if Phil Djurkovic can't play and Christian Veyer has to be the starter for a game or more, I think they're pretty comfortable with him. And like you said, you know, as we started this segment, it does feel like a deeper quarterback room. I mean, he does have one career start. So does Nate Yarnell. Phil Djurkovic has started, you know, a bunch of games in his career. So there's guys that have played at this level and at least started games. And, you know, last year that, you know, outside of Slovis, he didn't really have that.
Right, exactly. I mean, there was Nick Patty, but everyone sort of knew that, yeah, he's a guy with a ton of heart and all that, but he's not someone who you would be fully comfortable if they were thrust into the starting quarterback role for the course of an entire season. Whereas for Phil Djurkovic, as you said, he's done that already. And Christian Veyer, he's already been in the position where he's able to start and seems like he's a really solid transfer. I mean, even when they got him, that was everyone was saying with when they got Phil Djurkovic, I think a lot of people who view this program were saying, okay, really good transfer. They got someone with connections. He's been a good, you know, quarterback in the past. He's got experience, but he is a little bit injury prone. You never know with a transfer quarterback. Let's see if they can get a second option in case something happens to Djurkovic. Let's see if they can get someone to sit behind him who you feel like you can trust a good bit. And Veyer seems like that guy. I mean, when they got him, it was, yeah, this seems perfect. He's a guy who's had some experience. He's still young and there's plenty of room to grow and just a ton of raw talent there. And I think that's exactly what you want to have out of a second string QB.
Yeah. And just like just the general situation of Pitt quarterbacks is they only had one coming back, you know, off of last year's team. So they had to get the transfer and they really had to get two transfers. So it made sense. And I really think, you know, Veyer is probably the heir apparent. And if something happens, they're more than comfortable starting him this season. So yeah, it was just, they had to rebuild the quarterback room and it took more than just a starter and a recruit. They needed to get some depth. And I think that's where he really comes into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then talking about depth, Nate Yarnell, he's that one quarterback that did decide to come back. He did play a little bit last year, had the one start at Western Michigan. He wasn't forced to do too much in the spring game, but what do you think about him maybe fighting for that second string role, trying to get some action, his strengths, his weaknesses? What do you like from him coming back?
Yeah, just to go back to his start last year against Western Michigan, is I think, you know, we all remember from that game is they didn't ask him to do a whole lot. I mean, it was, you know, is
almost infuriatingly so. I mean, it worked out well, but there were some times where it was very obvious that they did not ask him to do much.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of one read throws. It was a lot of handing the ball off. But I think his stat line from that game was pretty good. He threw a touchdown, had a couple long passes to Jared Wayne. So he showed off some arm talent. And the thing that struck me with him on Saturday, it's not that he played well or poor. He was 7 of 10 for 33 yards. So, again, it wasn't like they were asking him to take chances. But after the game, Pat Narduzzi, when asked about the quarterback room, is he talked about Yarnell's leadership. So that kind of struck me a little bit is that, you know, if you look at it from his perspective, they brought in two transfers, you know, his age or older. And, you know, he has to be thinking like, oh, come on. Like, you know, I'm the one guy left. And but I think he's kind of taking this role in stride and he's not laying down at all. I mean, I think he really is pushing for that backup job with Vier. So, I mean, it's good for him and it's good for Pitt to have, you know, competition. I think competition brings out the best in everyone. So,
yeah. And I do think that that's a big part of them having depth is that in the past few years, there really hasn't been competition, even when maybe there should be. And in this case, yeah, you've got Dracovic as the number one and Vier is slotted as the number two, but nothing is 100% set in stone. If Yarnell plays really well, he's good in practice, all that, he could move into the number two slot. There definitely does seem to be some flexibility there. It's interesting you mentioned about that leadership in that obviously that's a big part of being a quarterback, but it's more than leading your teammates in other positions on the field. It's also being a leader in that quarterback room. And as you said, there's now a pretty big quarterback room. We're talking about these top four guys. He's the only one that was on the team last year. And so he, as you said, he could have left, transferred out and say, hey, you guys are going, you're getting two quarterbacks that you're going to slot above me. I'm leaving. He could have spoken out or lashed out or whatever. Instead, as you said, they like him as a leader in that quarterback room. Even if he stays the third string quarterback, having some level of continuity and that level of leadership from a guy who is still very young, that's got to be impressive.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, we talk about Dracovic kind of knowing the offense. I think it helps a lot that Yarnell knows the offense. I mean, it's all about the continuity. And so, you know, in this now as we go into the summer, wherever the team is not necessarily with the coaches and they're organizing stuff on their own, I mean, a guy like Yarnell thrown to the receivers, they know the route tree, they know the play calls, they know the scheme. So, I mean, I think he can help organize things. And I think it's just going to make for a more smooth offseason having him around.
Yeah, I completely agree. And then quarterback four, a true freshman, Ty Dieffenbach, from out west, didn't have the best spring game, threw a pick six, but he is a guy who they seem to like. Again, this is a long-term play, not expecting him to get any playing time this year. In fact, there's a good chance because there are three guys in front of him that he would redshirt this year. What have you seen out of him? Anything in the spring game, did that worry you? And just what do you think about him overall in terms of a long-term prognosis?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Ty, it's just all about upside with him because you have three quarterbacks ahead of him with experience. So if he's playing this year, then that means a lot of guys got injured in the season.
Something's gone horribly wrong.
Something's not right. But yeah, I think they're excited about his upside. And the thing with him is he came on the radar late because they had Kenny Minchie, the four-star quarterback commitment all year, who decided to go to Notre Dame just before signing day. So they were kind of, you know, stuck in a little bit, and they were kind of searching the country looking for a quarterback. Ty Dieffenbach was committed to UNLV, I believe, from Calabasas, California. And, you know, I think Frank Cignetti went and saw him through, and that was kind of enough. He came and visited and committed on the spot. So they obviously like him enough. I mean, he wasn't a highly rated guy. He's definitely a bit of a project. But, I mean, when you have a guy that's 6'6", you know, he has long arms, and, you know, you just see all the quarterbacks in the NFL these days. It's, you know, you look at Josh Allen, he kind of has that same profile. He's a nobody recruit from California, and all of a sudden he blew up. So in a sense, you know, Ty Dieffenbach is kind of like lottery ticket. You don't know what you're going to get, but
right,
you bring him into the program and you have this 6'6" guy with some athleticism, and you see what you have, and maybe you get lucky.
Right. As you said, I think a lottery. I was actually just going to say that. Yeah, it's a lottery ticket, especially when, as you said, they were sort of scrambling. yes, they had these three quarterbacks in Djurkovic, Vare, and Yarnell, but they did want a true freshman coming in, especially once they lost Kenny Minchie. So they wanted to go out, land someone, and yeah, as you said, he's a project. Not the best play on that pick six in the spring game, but at the end of the day, it's still a spring game. It's early. It doesn't seem to be anything to be too worried about, especially when he's not even, as we said, if he plays this year, something's gone horribly wrong. So I don't think that one bad throw in a spring game, one bad play in a spring game is really going to affect him.
No, I mean, it's again, you know, we saw the spring game. They saw the 14 practices leading up to the spring game. And right. Sometimes those matter more. I mean, this is just a glorified scrimmage with fans in the stands. That's really all the spring game is. So I don't take too much of him throwing an interception there. I mean, it was one bad throw. It is what it is.
Yeah, it's just a good excuse to get fans coming out to Heinz. As a side note, I know they can't do it, but that one year at Highmark Stadium, that was the best. I will die on that hill. When they had the spring game at Highmark Stadium, I think it's because they were doing renovations on Heinz Field, Acrisure Stadium. That one year at Highmark, that was incredible. Not many people could be there, but the atmosphere was great. I wish they could have it at a different location. I know it's a rule that they can't. I wish they could, and I wish they had it there, because for something like a spring game, I loved that atmosphere.
Well, they could have it anywhere they want. It's just a matter of you can't host recruits off
campus.
That's
what it is. Yeah,
that's what it is. So this spring Pitt did a really good job of bringing in recruits. Maybe not necessarily Saturday, but throughout the spring practices, they had a lot of guys visiting, maybe more so than usual. And you know, just as someone that kind of covers recruiting and kind of sees it, it was impressive. It's more than I'm used to seeing Pitt do in a spring, and it kind of speaks to the recruiting class right now, where they have 10 commitments and normally they would only have one or two. So I do think just the overall general vibe of the program is better, maybe outside, you know, the Pittsburgh market, these recruits are seeing it a little bit more. So yeah, I think, you know, the spring football, everything that took place on the field is great, but I think one of the biggest stories of this spring has kind of been on, you know, a recruiting standpoint.
Yeah. And that's something as this sort of off season goes on, we're going to be talking about on this podcast and keeping an eye on. I know you are at Panther Lair, but the fact that, as you said, normally recruiting is done heavily in June. Most of they don't get many recruits before June. This year, as you said, they've got 10 already. They had that in March, essentially. So it's been really impressive. Looking at the running back room, they obviously lose Israel Abanikanda, but they've got some guys coming back and a transfer. One player that did really well in the spring game was Rodney Hammond. He's coming back. He had the kickoff return. It seems like he's going to be the number one choice. Do you think he's going to be able to be as, maybe not as agile as Izzy was, but do you think he's going to be agile enough to be the first string running back for this squad?
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a drop off because they're not the same player, but in some ways, Ronnie Hammond's better at Izzy Abanikanda at certain things. I mean, you look at last year, he was the leading rusher against West Virginia in the backyard brawl. The West Virginia really bottled up Izzy, and, you know, Hammond made a lot of big plays. Then you look later in the year, Izzy was out for the Syracuse game. He rushed for 100 yards. Izzy opted out of the Sun Bowl, and then, you know, Rodney Hammond scored two touchdowns and led the team in rushing. So he's been the starting running back three or four times this past season. And, you know, even back in 2021 as a true freshman, he led them in rushing in multiple games. So I think he's very comfortable running the ball. I think they're very comfortable running the offense through him. Again, they're different players. He's not going to break off the 70-yard runs Abanikanda did, but he'll get the 5 or 6 yards in front of him and kind of keep things moving. So I think from that standpoint, I think Pitt's in pretty good hands at the running back spot.
Yeah. And like you said, West Virginia, he was great. If he hadn't gotten hurt, there's a good chance that season goes differently for, you know, Abanikanda doesn't put up the same stats that he does because he's splitting way more carries with Rodney Hammond. I think he's a great running back. I think he's going to be excellent as the first string. It was just interesting to see. You don't think of him as someone who might return a kickoff and go all the way. So it was interesting to see him, you know, more in that open field scenario. Daniel Carter, you talk about a big bruiser. Daniel Carter, he's an old school kind of running back. He had a touchdown run. What do you think the situation is going to be with him obviously with offenses changing, not using that kind of running back as much anymore, although that is the kind of running back that Pat Narduzzi does still love, that type. How do you think they're going to be able to use Daniel Carter?
Yeah, that's kind of the same question we had out of spring last year. And what we saw is he's kind of a fullback in this system. And I'm guessing that's probably going to be the case again this year, because you're looking at Hammond probably being the main guy, and you have Sebo Flemister who can spell him. So, I mean, I think Carter can get some short yardage carries. I think the thing with Frank Cignetti Jr.'s offense is it goes multiple. You could have two tight ends. You have a tight end and a fullback. You could have three wide, four wide. So there's a lot of different ways. So I think he'll get on the field. It just as a matter of touches, I'm really not sure how many Daniel Carter will get. So the story on him might be is he just might just be a spring game legend.
Yeah, that could definitely be it. I'll tell you, when he does get the ball, when it's first and goal from the one and he gets the ball, you're feeling pretty good about it. So it's definitely a great tool to have in your toolkit, is having someone like that on the team. You mentioned Sebo Flemister. Would you say that he's slotted to be the number two? Because then there's another player and a transfer, Derek Davis from LSU, who, as you mentioned, caught that touchdown and then you know, caught the pass and ran it in for a touchdown. What do you think is the situation between those two?
Yeah, I mean, I think towards the end of the year, you saw Flemister come on a little bit more. He was a little shaky when he first got to Pitt. I think he had a fumble like on his very first carry and kind of was in the doghouse. But he grew over time, and I think they're comfortable putting him in there. And the thing with Davis is he is kind of a wild card, because he just played two seasons as a defensive back for LSU. So he not only is he transferring schools, he's transferring positions. So it's you know, he obviously was a great high school running back here in the Pittsburgh area. And, you know, he did show off some nice things on Saturday. So he's interesting, and he's one of the more physically well put together players on the team. I mean, he's a freak athlete. And, you know, when you stand next to him, I mean, he looks like an NFL player. So it's just a matter of him adapting to the position. So, I mean, I think you go into the season, Hammond's your one. And I think you can kind of look at, okay, maybe Derek Davis can push Flemister for the number two job. But either way, I think the way the position, how demanding it is, you're going to need all three and maybe even a fourth.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Again, a lot of depth at that running back position. Finally, not position specific, but on the defensive end, we saw the pick six from PJ O'Brien I mentioned earlier. Saw a couple plays from some other players. Sean Fitzsimmons seemed to play well, a couple other guys. Who were some of the people that you thought stood out at the spring game that you think will really take a big step up come this fall?
Yeah, and I'll start on the defensive line, because that's a position everyone's watching. And, you know, the way Pitt's spring game has been set up, like we talked about how they split the offensive line, it's like the defensive line just always overwhelmed them. Well, they still did it. I mean, they did it against the first team offensive line, the second team offensive line. I was really impressed with Sean Fitzsimmons. He's a redshirt freshman, and he's kind of that, again, the small, quick defensive tackle, you know, that has followed in the footsteps of Twyman and Kancey. So I don't know if he's going to be as good as those guys, but you can see, like, okay, he might be. I mean, he's that good. And you know, Nakai Johnson had a really good spring. Samuel Okunlola is another redshirt freshman with a lot of talent. So I was just really struck by the defensive line play, because if you look at it, Kancey's gone, Baldonado's gone, Alexander's gone, John Morgan's gone. It's a brand new everything.
And yeah, a lot of new names this year.
There's just not – it didn't seem like a giant drop-off. I mean, they're new names, but it's the same production. It's the same result. And so it's impressive that they're able to continue to restock that position year after year.
Yeah, and you've got to give it up to Narduzzi, to Bates, the D-line coach. I mean, this is really impressive how they're able – they've gotten, it seems, to a position like a lot of these top programs where – yeah, you lose a bunch of guys. I mean, you look at not at the same level, but Alabama, Georgia, those programs, they lose a ton of guys on defense every year. They just restock them, and it's like you don't miss a beat. And it seems like, especially on that defensive line, that one position, that one unit, it's just next man up all the time, every year.
Yeah, and just even looking at it now, I mean, they're still, you know, they lost so many starters, but they're still David Green, Devin Danielson, Tyler Bentley. I mean, Deion Hayes. I mean, guys that have been playing on this defensive line the past two or three seasons. So again, it's a lot of new faces on that defense, but in a way it's not, because they rotate so much, not even just on the defensive line, but all around. So you have a lot of experience on that defense. So while they lost some star power on that side of the ball, the solid core of what they have is still going to make for a pretty good defense, I think.
Any other standouts you think from spring that we should keep an eye on as we enter the fall?
Yeah, I mean, I think you brought up PJ O'Brien, and I really think that safety position is one to watch because, you know, you went from Damar Hamlin, Paris Ford, that pairing, then you go to, you know, Eric Hallett, Brandon Hill, and there wasn't a drop-off at all. So now we're going to see if they can do it another time. And so it's looking like PJ O'Brien's going to be one of them. Javon McIntyre from Philadelphia is probably going to be another option there. Stephon Hall. I mean, so they have some young safeties. So I think going into fall camp, I thought they played well in the spring, but I'm really interested to see, you know, how it all works because, you know, those first couple seasons Pat Narduzzi was here, they struggled. And it really didn't start turning around until Damar Hamlin got, you know, playing and comfortable. And so I think really the key to this whole defense is kind of that field safety, that free safety position. So I'm very interested to see, you know, how this next pairing of safety does in you know, heading into next year.
Yeah, it's going to be really exciting to see. Javon McIntyre, especially for me, I actually called a game of his at Imhotep in Philadelphia. So that'll be really cool. Any other final thoughts when it comes to the spring game, spring practices, all that stuff before this team now goes into a bit of a slumber for a couple months?
No, I mean, I think just kind of I was talking about the other day on Panther Lair, and just one of the things I was writing, it's weird that they're losing their leading passer, rusher, receiver, all these great players on defense, and everyone still kind of feels like, you know what, they're not, they might be okay. They still might be good. And I think that's a sign of, you know, what Pat Narduzzi has done lately. And it's, you look at the recruiting rankings, Pitt doesn't always have a top 10 class, but they have all these guys that do so well. So they're really good at identifying talent, developing talent. And so it's just interesting that we're at a different off season with so much change. But at the same time, you feel almost like confident that they can win 8, 9, 10 games again.
Yeah, that is interesting that, hope springs eternal in spring games, spring practice, all that stuff. And yet maybe it's just the last few years, the fact they've sort of proved it, especially on the defensive end that, people weren't expecting Kalijah Kancey to step up and, you know, and fill the shoes. And a lot of these players, it really is just next man up. You thought there wouldn't be anyone like Damar Hamlin or Paris Ford and all these players who come in and are able to just step in and fill the shoes of some of these big names and do just as well, if not even better in some cases. So it is really impressive at a lot of positions, but especially on the defensive side. Ton of guys going in the draft this year, going to the NFL, and yet, as you said, seems to be a lot of optimism out of Pitt football. So that'll do it for this first episode of Football Unscripted. I want to thank my guest, Jim Hammett. Again, Jim Hammett, you can find all his stuff at Panther Lair. We're actually going to bring Jim back for a new episode, the first episode of Basketball Unscripted, talking about Pitt basketball recruits, as well as Pitt women's basketball and the new hire that they made. So for this first ever episode of Football Unscripted, for Jim Hammett, thank you so much. I'm Corey Cohen signing off for now from Football Unscripted on the Pitt Talk Network.